This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County, and actually, it's a better morning today than it was yesterday. It's actually warmed up. It's going to be a beautiful day. Have a great show lined up today. I have Circuit Judge Steve Daniels, and also Senior Judge Steve Daniels, and great athlete for LSU, Steve Daniels. he covers the gamut. And actually, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I didn't realize, Steve, that you came from West Tennessee around the Milan-Huntington area.
Right. I was born in Milan, and both my parents were from Huntington or Carroll County. Mm-hmm. And my dad was in the farm machinery business and as a representative of the old Case Company and then Kubota. So we moved around in Texas between Tennessee, Arkansas, and they ultimately ended in Texas before they retired.
Was it a big difference for you as a young kid to move from West Tennessee over to Arkansas area?
It was a big difference. We actually moved from my dad went to college at Arkansas State, now mm-hmm. University College, and I was in the kindergarten at that mm-hmm. time. And then after he got out of school, then we lived in Memphis and then Nashville and then to North Little Rock, Arkansas.
You're almost like an army brat.
Yeah,
you've
that's
been
right.
Everywhere.
I sort of moved around every time the rent came due.
Was it hard as a young fella to kind of get acclimated to school and your friends? I mean,
it was. It was tough to leave your old buddies and then find new ones when you went somewhere. But the longest stay was in North Little Rock, and from the sixth grade through high school, I was there. So that was nice.
Did you take part in sports at all?
Everything that I could play. Sure did.
Now, of course, we're leading up to something that a lot of the old sports guys, and maybe the ladies remember too, that you went on to college. Now, how did you go about selecting this particular university?
Well, it's sort of an interesting story. Coach McClendon, Charles McClendon, played on the national championship team at Kentucky for Bear Bryant, mm-hmm. and he was an assistant at LSU, and he was from Arkansas, and so he recruited Arkansas. And when Paul Dietzel left for Army, I had been sort of looked at by LSU when I was a sophomore and junior year, and then when he became coach, he started recruiting me, and I just decided I want to go playing that bayou, and those bright lights attracted me down there.
Of course, Louisiana is a beautiful state, and to me, I love Louisiana. I love the people down there because they're so warm and friendly, but they are a little bit different. But before we get into that, why in the world would Paul Dietzel leave a successful program like LSU, where he became known throughout the whole college system, and go to Army?
I'll never know that. I'll never understand that. But he's a unique person. He's still alive. In fact, he's back in Baton Rouge, and he's an accomplished artist.
Oh, really?
And he spends most of his time. He's got an art gallery there and involved in the art business.
Did you get a chance to meet him much?
I have met him on one or two occasions, but he was gone by the time I was at LSU.
He was a great innovator. Of course, the one they have now is an innovator, but I don't know in which direction he's going.
That's right.
Now, Charlie McClendon had been one of the best coaches to play for.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he seemed like he's so dynamic, but yet I think he'd be easy to get to know.
He was a very personable individual, not very much in the command of the English language, but
he's in Louisiana.
he always called everybody Hoss, and he was quite a person who really advanced his players and made sure that they went on after football to something to make a living and encourage that.
Well, now, Paul Dietzel was extremely innovative, as I said earlier, and he had a special term for each part of his team. I mean, and of course, I guess the most famous was the
Chinese bandits,
right? And they had the white team
And the gold team.
And the gold team. Now, which one were you part of?
Well, actually, the bandits was the third team, and that was the one I first addressed.
But they were the most famous.
Yeah, they were. They were supposed to be defensive specialists, and in that particular era, when I very first got there, there was limited substitution. So he had an offensive team. The white team was supposedly the experts in the offense, and the gold team goes both ways. And then the Chinese bandits were supposedly defensive specialists. But if you got caught on the field with a turnover, you had to stay out there until the ball was dead and they changed teams. But pretty interesting.
Well, he brought a sense of we're going to win no matter who we're playing. I know Dietzel took it, and then Charlie McClendon took it. Who was the toughest team you would play each year back then?
It was always Alabama. They were Bear Bryant was in his heyday and had 215 pounds of defensive tackles, and they were quick as cats, and you just never could keep them all blocked.
And you're saying 215?
215.
Now they're 315.
Some
what happened?
375. Yeah. Well, that was an era that, unfortunately, it was segregation, and the SEC was lily white at that time. And, of course, it's been a transition where black players have gotten to play, and they deserve to have an opportunity.
Yeah, LSU has been a dominant force for many, many years. But one of the games that I can remember, you probably don't even remember this, but they had a great halfback at one time. And I think they were either number one or number two team in the nation.
I know where you're going.
And they went to Tennessee.
Yeah, Billy Cannon.
Billy Cannon.
Yeah, I know Billy.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's before my time for playing, but I know Billy, and Billy's had his own problems, but he was honored 2 weeks ago down there, and he's doing well.
He was one of the most fully talented halfbacks I have ever seen. I mean, he was just a natural. It didn't seem like he didn't have to put in a whole lot of work for it. He was just playing good.
Right.
And I never, what was it, Halloween night when they were playing Mississippi, they were 1-2 in the nation or something like that. And punt went to Billy Cannon.
He ran it back.
They said every player on the Mississippi team hit him on his way to that touchdown.
That's right. And if you ever get to see the original film of it, you'll see that as he crosses the goal line and goes into the end zone, there's a man in a red shirt who jumps out of the stadium and embraces him at the end of the end zone. Real interesting.
Only in Louisiana.
Only in Louisiana.
What were your fondest memories of going to LSU?
Well, it was the people and the aura of being in that stadium and participating in a limited way. I certainly wasn't a star, but I worked my way through college, and I was honored 1 year to make honorable mention, all SEC, so that was pretty good, and I did some place kicking for them. And so it was an opportunity to go further. And McClendon ensured I got that opportunity.
Did he have that discipline that Bear Bryant had? Did he?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was,
'cause Bear was kind of ruthless in a way.
Much so.
Team.
But one of the things that these college athletes in any sport will learn is the importance and discipline of time management. Mm-hmm. And they can carry that through any and everything that they do, to manage their time and use it wisely. They have to, because that's the way the organization works.
Now, when LSU played at night, it's always depicted, it is the toughest stadium in the United States to go in, play a game as a visitor, more than the daytime. Now, what is the aura about playing at LSU at night?
Well, there's a number of things that played into that, but first of all,
80,000 crazy people.
Well, at that area, it was 68,000, and about three quarters of them had been drinking in excess for 2 days before they got there. But one of the things is the Bengal Tiger had been the mascot of the university, and I'm sure that this doesn't happen today, but the Bengal tiger was brought onto the field in a cage behind the cheerleaders, and it still is now, but at that era, he was prodded to roar into a microphone, and that got everybody really juiced up.
That would have got my attention. I think, don't the visiting team still have to go by him?
That's true.
On the way in?
That's true. Yeah, that's the way it's set up.
All right, now, your dad was in the business, I mean, with the implements, the tractors and stuff.
Right.
And then you went to school, and then at what point did you decide, I want to be an attorney? I
mean, my senior,
you got a hit in the head.
Yeah,
when you were
I think so. when I was a senior at LSU, I decided that that's what I'd like to do, and no one in my family has ever been an attorney, so I didn't have any connections to get in law school. But McClendon wrote every place that I applied, and
wow.
I was accepted.
That is pretty neat. I mean that's quite a seal of approval when your coach like that'll do that, especially one like him.
Well, it made a lot of difference to me.
Well,
you never know when you help somebody where they'll go, but he certainly helped me.
Nobody gets through this life without having some help if you're going to reach a limit of
right.
success. I mean, you have to have it.
Yeah, that's true. And McClendon seemed to follow his players. I was telling somebody the other day that one of the interesting things about McClendon was his commitment to helping his players advance their education and then their children, because Charles McClendon contracted cancer and ultimately died, but his goal before his death was to raise $1 million for a foundation, and that foundation's sole purpose was to provide educational funds for children of his players to go to LSU, and they could not be athletes to qualify. And I don't know how many hundreds of young people have been put through LSU through his efforts, which is an admirable thing.
That's amazing. Do they have, I know you go around UT and Neyland Stadium, and you have all these statues and names of all the great coaches and players. Do they have that down in Louisiana?
They do not. You're talking about in the stadium itself?
Yeah, around the stadium.
No, that's not done down there, but I think the practice facility is named for McClendon, a new facility down there now.
Yeah.
Of course, Maravich has got the basketball arena. Maravich lived down the hall from me when I was
really?
In LSU. And he was quite a character.
Did you get to know him?
Oh, I knew him well.
Pete Maravich.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Quite
Maybe
a character.
I saw him play. You know who held him to least points in any other school?
Probably UT, I guess.
Well, I wouldn't have brought it up if it hadn't.
That's right.
Did you get?
Did you know that one of his teammates was from Knoxville and is in a real estate business up there? Name?
No.
Yeah, a fellow named Wayne Tipton.
I've heard that name.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But did you get to see him play?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was he as great as they? He was more like a Harlem Globetrotter the way he played, because he could do anything with the ball. He was magical with the ball.
He actually, you've seen this and heard this, I'm sure, but he had a little Volkswagen Beetle, and he could drive and dribble the ball outside of the window. I've seen him do that.
The man was eat up with it, wasn't he?
Yeah. His dad was his coach, and his coach and dad were pretty demanding of him. Probably was excessive. There's no question about it.
But the thing about Louisiana, I mean, you're talking about Maravich and all the other great players there. It was showtime when you went down there. I mean, it wasn't just a normal football game or a normal basketball game or anything like that. Everything had to be exploited a little bit above everything else. And that was kind of a pretty neat place to go to school, wasn't it?
It was. It had a long history. We carried, and I've commented on this before, we were the only SEC team who had a black trainer. And this caused us some trouble sometimes. And The man's name was Herman Lang, and Herman had been trainer all the way back into the time of Huey Long. So I enjoyed a whole lot visiting with Herman, and he could tell me some great stories about Huey Long and LSU football. One of the interesting things doesn't exist now.
You talk about the Kingfisher?
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Huey Long, when he was governor at LSU at the Tiger Stadium, had the benches recessed into the ground. So when you sat on the bench, your feet were in a trench, and your fanny was sitting level with the playing surface, because Huey Long had the box seats on the 50-yard line. There was no barrier between he and the coach, and he actually would call plays and direct the band from there during his era.
So he actually was the Kingfisher.
He was the Kingfisher.
That's amazing.
The story goes that at the halftime in an LSU game, he fired Gaynell Tinsley as coach.
Oh, my.
I don't know if that's true or not.
That's the ultimate power.
he was some kind of heavyweight.
I wonder if we can bring him back to life and take him to UT. Now, before we get into your career and everything, and we're talking about Louisiana, you and some of your buddies – just took a trip, a safari, down to Louisiana.
That's right. Last week we were down in Venice, which is that's the stop off. That's where the road ends before it goes into the Gulf of Mexico, and we were doing some fishing down there for speckled trout and redfish, and we had a wonderful time.
Now, if John Stanford's listening or Jimmy C. Newman, they know exactly,
where
you were.
John particularly, because I talked to him about it the other day.
I'm surprised he didn't go with you. Yeah, well, or beg to go.
He'd just come back is the reason, I think.
Now, who were some of the characters that you were willing to go with down there and enjoy some of your time?
Oh, well, David Kais was with us, as well as...
And that's how I found out you guys went, because I was talking to John Rogers.
Yeah, the other day, and we were gone. Yeah. David went, and Bill Weitzel and his son Aaron.
D.A.
And let me think of here, Tommy Hoard, who is quite a fisherman in and of himself. Dr. Ingalls, Bob Ingalls.
Oh, wow.
And there were nine of us, and Jeff Davis. So we had a great time.
Coca-Cola Davis.
Yeah, uh-huh. So we had a good time.
I'll bet you did. Yeah. I mean, that was a fun bunch.
Yeah, they...
Whether you caught anything or not, it had been a great trip.
We caught a lot of fish.
Now, you were an attorney here in Murfreesboro. Now, how did you get here?
Oh, that's an interesting story. I went to, ultimately, I did a little segment in the Army and then went to UT Law School, and I got a job. I practiced up in Knoxville for a year, and I got a job as a hearing examiner for the Board of Equalization, you know, where your tax, county taxes for real estate can go through the local Board of Equalization, then you can appeal them to the state. Well, I'd travel around the state listening to these appeals, and so I got to looking at Murfreesboro and how the state and the interstate system worked and the university, and I thought, boy, that'd be a good place to practice
where
law.
All the action is.
Yeah, and so that's where I came. After a year of hearing tax appeals, which you can imagine, they're really interesting.
Yeah, bored still.
Then I came down here and started practicing. And so Bill Wright, yeah, late Bill Wright, gave me a job.
Oh, great guy.
And, of course, he gave every attorney he could find one, I think, brought him a lot down here.
So it wasn't the warmth and the heart and the honor and all those things of the South that brought you right here in Murfreesboro. It was the money.
It was the opportunity. And what a great place to have opportunity.
Yes.
A wonderful place.
My uncle told me years ago that when he was living in New York, they would say up there, if you can't, you know, you always say you can't make it in New York, you can't make it in, or you can make it, whatever. But they say Rutherford County, Murfreesboro area is the place to go. They said that is going to be one of the most successful areas anywhere in the country.
And it's true.
I mean, it is true.
If you look at the development of this county and the far-sighted leadership of our officials over the years, it has panned out. Their vision, and they had a vision of what they thought MTSU could be, what Rutherford County could be, and they were to be commended for making some far-reaching steps. When you look at Smyrna, for the county and Smyrna to be involved in purchasing the Seward Air Force Base when it was closed, all of those things were big risk, but the visionaries of the forefathers of the county government took those risks, and they had a plan, and it was certainly for the benefit of our citizens.
Yeah, I never thought much about it when I was a kid growing up, and then only as I got older I started thinking about the history and our forefathers, the ones that actually established this area. And it goes back, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. I mean, all those great genes and minds have been going on from generation to generation, and they're still here. I mean,
right.
It's amazing. And then, of course, we've had the vision to accept people who have come in from out of this area like yourself and others that have given so much to the community. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Judge Steve Daniels.
It could be any moment. The deer of a lifetime walks by, and you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors.
All right, now you hit that one, my boy.
We got camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells, boots, pretty much anything. We got it. If we don't have it, we'll get it.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street, just down from the old International Paper location.
This is Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station, FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thoburn. Polly Judd is skeptical of talk that her famous granddaughter, actress Ashley Judd, might run for the U.S. Senate in Kentucky. The 85-year-old says she doesn't think her granddaughter can challenge Mitch McConnell. Judd was a member of this year's Tennessee delegation to the Democratic National Convention. A trial is scheduled to begin today for a Johnson County man charged in the death of his 2-year-old son. TRN's Tom Latek has more.
Police say toddler Jacob Mitchell found a loaded handgun and fatally shot himself nearly 3 years ago. 29-year-old Christopher Mitchell faces charges of felony murder, aggravated child endangerment or neglect, tampering with evidence, and identity theft. Mitchell is currently serving a 15-year federal prison sentence after he was convicted of having a handgun as a felon.
Animal rescue investigators say they busted one of the largest and most disturbing alleged dogfighting operations ever discovered in Tennessee over the long weekend. Officials say 65 dogs were found chained up and emaciated behind a house in Ashland City. According to animal control officers, dogfighting equipment such as a treadmill and a fighting pen were found at the scene.
This is an advertisement, not valid in all states. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. iLawsuit.com is an advertising group that represents lawyers advertising their services and is a free matching service for consumers. It is not a law firm or lawyer referral service.
Breaking news update for birth control users. It has been reported that an agreement has been reached to settle lawsuits filed on behalf of women who claim they were seriously injured by Yaz birth control pills. If you or a loved one has suffered a blood clot while using Yaz, Yasmin, B-Yaz, or Ocella, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Injuries include lung and leg blood clots, stroke, and even death. If you have used Yaz, Yasmin, B-Yaz, or Ocella and have been injured, time to file your claim is limited. Don't be a silent victim. Get the power of an attorney on your side. For more information and a free consultation, call 800-841-0280. Call now. You may be entitled to financial compensation. 800-841-0280. Call 800-841-0280. That's 800-841-0280.
There's good news and bad news for Tennessee farmers.
With most of the harvest complete in Tennessee, farmers lament the loss of corn, but say timely rains that began in midsummer saved most other crops. Cotton is expected to finish among the best per acre yields ever.
TRN's Dan Idom. Murfreesboro residents will soon be offered an opportunity to look inside how local government works. The Citizens Academy will begin early next year and run for 8 weeks. The cost is $25 per participant. A University of Tennessee tight end is facing charges for underage drinking and public intoxication. 19-year-old Brendan Downs was arrested yesterday morning after being removed from a nightclub for reportedly becoming loud and using profane language. School officials say they are aware of the situation. I'm Kristen Thoburn, Tennessee Radio Network News.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Have devastating floods or storms affected you and your family? HRA Home Improvement is just a phone call away. HRA Home Improvement can handle just about any of your building needs. HRA Home Improvement is a local company with a mission to do the job right the first time, every time. Call your local general contractor, HRA Home Improvement Company, at 615-410-7924. Again, that number is 615-410-7924.
Have you ever considered how trust plays an important role every time you buy something? Today's savvy consumers know the most important step to customer trust and satisfaction is doing business with a company that has made a public commitment to doing what is right. All BBB members have made that commitment. Check out GoBBB.org for a list of our accredited businesses. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
We interrupt WGNS programming to test our emergency alert system. This is only a test.
WeatherEye. For the forecast area, a slight chance for showers, otherwise cloud cover, highs in the upper 50s, of a south wind around 5. Tonight, rain, showers, and a low of 41. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Thaluber.
Right now, 52.
Our good neighbor of the day today, Dr. Matthew Perkins at Tennessee Medicine and Pediatrics. He receives flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts for being nominated our good neighbor today. And the winner of the Junior's Foodland birthday cake, 17-year-old Miracle York. She receives that cake from our friends over at Junior's. You can fake just about anything, but you can't fake car insurance. Got a speeding ticket? That's cheap compared to what it'd cost without car insurance. If you need affordable state minimum coverage, call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO for the real thing. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
And welcome back with Judge Steve Daniels. We want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, online at homecaretennessee.com. That's telephone number 713-4639. At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. I remember those good days when you were campaigning for circuit judge.
Oh, it was some hot weather in August of 1980 is when I put my hat in the ring and ran, and I was a greenhorn for sure. I was only about 33 years old. I was one of the youngest popularly elected circuit judges in the state.
You were young at that time. Yeah. I remember it vividly. Yeah. And seeing you out in your little truck out there campaigning.
A white shoe leather truck. Many a mile and a lot of shoe leather.
And you did. You got actually out of your truck, and if you see somebody out plowing the field, you'd be out there with them.
I would.
That great? That was when campaigning was fun, wasn't it?
It was a real interesting experience, and it was a real grounding experience too for the job that I was going to end up doing, because I realized at that point how important this ordinary citizen is in the legal system.
I could always tell when you were on the bench that you were up there you had a sense of honor about you or a sense of responsibility, but you also knew why laws existed. They existed to protect the people in this country and especially in this community. And I always admired the way you handled your court, and you were always in charge. There was no doubt who was in charge of that court.
I appreciate that. I certainly wanted to be in charge because the responsibility to assure everyone fairness was on my shoulders, and I wanted to make sure that was properly discharged.
I was talking to Don Ash last week, and you two are a lot alike in a number of ways because you didn't feel like your responsibility was just in that courtroom. I mean, you reached out into the community, and it was just something about you two. I always knew that you were going to be prepared, and that was a statement that you gave when you were sitting in that chair. You were in control, and you knew what was going on, and for whichever case that you had total knowledge of what you needed to do your job.
Well, I think that was a responsibility to do the job. You needed to have read the file and understood what the issues are. You won't always know what is going to happen,
right,
because the twists and turns of the trial lend themselves to the unexpected. I've told many a trial judge in teaching that being a trial judge is you're sitting on the edge of a disaster. It's not a matter of whether it'll happen. It's just a matter of when it's going to happen. Something's going to happen. I've had people have heart attacks, die. I've had people have grand mal seizures. I've had all kinds of things that would happen in that courtroom, and you've just got to react and try to do it the best you can.
And it's kind of special times because you didn't have a whole lot of people in the judicial system. You had a whole lot fewer law enforcement officers. I remember Wiley Holloway, and then, of course, Guy Dotson was there with him. I don't go back much beyond that, but all the judges on up, and of course, we've only had two DAs, Guy Dotson and Bill Weitzel, your
right
fishing buddy.
There you go.
But it didn't seem like that there was a whole lot of commotion going on back then. It was a simpler time, and you were the center of attraction at that time.
Well, you got to remember, Truman, the county, I think when I was elected in the district, it was like 84,000 people here, and then there's 9,000 in Cannon County, and so we're dealing with a very small population of folks, and I think I don't know how many were in the sheriff's department at that time. Of course, when I was elected, I believe it was Sheriff Snell, and
right,
you came on and when Snell passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I was the circuit judge, and I had two counties, and that was it. Whitney Stegall was a chancellor,
mm-hmm,
and we had all of those responsibilities for a population that was certainly growing, as you can see what has happened over the ensuing years. I don't know what Rutherford County is, what now, about
265, 270.
Yeah, and the district's like closer to 300,000, so it's really grown.
Now, was there a big difference in holding court in Murfreesboro and in Woodbury?
Absolutely. Big difference. It was, in many ways, one of the most refreshing things. When you go over to Woodbury, you know, the sheriff drove up and all the prisoners let themselves out of the car and walked into the courtroom.
Just stopped by the restaurant before
and stand in the jury box, and there wouldn't be but five or six of them, you know, and a lot of them were repeat customers and whatnot. But the whole, it's almost like Mayberry.
So but wasn't that kind of refreshing?
It was very refreshing. It was very, very, very refreshing. And then some really interesting problems that people could get themselves into.
Now, you, through the years, you have had some of the toughest, more interesting cases that's ever been here. And I know that some of them probably react to your memory more than others. What are some of the ones that you remember the most as being kind of unusual or tough?
Well, since you're the sheriff and my interviewer, I'm going to try to stay with some criminal cases because you'll know about them. Mm-hmm. I was elected in 1980 in August, took the bench in September, And I was in my first-degree murder case by the end of November, I believe, in the case of State of Tennessee versus Bruce Benford.
Oh, yes, I remember
and,
that.
And Benford had killed his father in a deal in which he was trying to extract or extort his father money, and he killed him over that with a sawed-off shotgun. And it was... Mr. Benford was a well-respected person in this community, and it had a great interest and great strong feelings among people about what and should be done and how it should be done. And that was a tough case in that it involved a high degree of emotion, a high degree of examination of me as a young trial judge to see if I could handle it. And so
you passed.
We started
you did
off
well.
We started off with a litmus test within just a few months, and that case had some interesting twists and turns. As you know, you probably investigated it, did you?
I was part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know some of the difficulties of that particular case with the drug issues, etc. So
they're always different or harder, as you well know, when it involves family against family.
It does.
Or with family. It depends on how you were looking at it. But it was the strangest case I can ever remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's other cases. I'm going to, since you asked me this question, somebody asked me on a trip. In fact, this fishing trip, somebody asked me, do you ever have a case or have you ever had a case in which you were the trial judge that you knew the defendant was guilty of a murder, say, and the jury didn't find him guilty? And the answer to that question is certainly yes. And it's a concept that's very important in our system. And the concept is jury nullification. The jury is the conscience of our community.
Right.
They're citizens coming from, hopefully, from every walk of life, and the trial judges have got an obligation to not let anybody off. Mm-hmm. For those of you who are potential jurors, if you don't get let off, there's a good reason, because your collective wisdom from all walks of life are important to the vanguard of the judicial system, which mm-hmm. is the jury, and they are the arbiters of what is right and wrong in the conduct that's presented. They can cancel inappropriate government action. They can act as a buffer between someone who should not have to serve a jail sentence. And so they have an important, vital role in jury involvement in the system, be it civil or criminal, should never be tampered with. I know the legislature has limited juries recently on civil damages, etc., but I don't think that's right, because they're the arbiters of what is justice in this country. But anyway, back to my question that was asked of me, and I can remember on more than one occasion where someone was killed, a homicide, and the person who killed them was tried for murder, but the person who had been killed had been involved in such bad conduct that the jury simply would not convict them of what was the higher charge. And sometimes people say, well, that's that defense that the deceased needed to be killed. Have you ever heard that before?
I have heard of it, and I, too, have seen it. But you charge the jury, and then you let them know what they should take in consideration, what they shouldn't, and they should follow the letter of the law. But when emotions get involved with what they know is right legally, but is it morally right? You know, right. So there is a conflict there, as everybody knows.
That's right.
And when they actually go with the moral side of what is going on, you have done your job. You told them what they need to take in consideration. But yet, they're as jurors, they have a responsibility to try to do what they think is right. And maybe there's really not a conflict there after all, because I could see you, after that's over with and you go ahead and dismiss the jury, you can't feel too bad about that.
No, you can't. I can remember another case in which it was a death penalty case here, and it had gone to the jury, and it had been out for 2 days, and there was a lady on the jury who was a very small woman who you could tell was very emotional and upset, and so the jury actually hung. And as a result of it not being able to reach a verdict, then the law required that a life sentence be imposed as opposed to the death penalty. And when the jury was released, this lady was in such distress, I asked her to be taken into my chambers so we could get her medical help. Mm-hmm. And I, in my mind, thought that she had been holding out in this particular trial for a defense verdict, and of course that's fine, whatever her view was, I accept. But to show you how you can't read exactly what people are thinking, when I came in, I patted her on the back and thanked her for her participation, and said everything was going to be all right, and we'd get her some medical treatment. And she told me then, she said, "Judge," she said, "I've been holding out for the death penalty for 2 days." I had it completely wrong as to what her view was.
Now, a lot of people don't realize that the people that are involved in the trial, and once they're dismissed to go back and try to get a verdict, a consensus verdict among themselves, almost everybody, the judge, the DAs, the law enforcement, prosecutors, defense, everybody, they all sit back and say, where are our strengths in that jury and where are our weaknesses? Mm-hmm. And it's funny how many times we're all wrong when they tell who what they did later on, if they want to.
If they want to, they don't have to
right.
do that. But it is unusual. You don't necessarily always read people right. And that's one of the reasons that the law actually uses, in criminal arena, so many screens to prevent information that could bias a juror from reaching a conclusion. For example, if you knew that the defendant in this particular trial had been previously convicted of writing a bad check 10 years ago, you might look at him or her in a different light than another person who had no information, you had no information about. So there's some good reasoning for logic for the reasons of the rules of evidence and the law's application.
But during voir dire, you don't have a clue whether that person that you're interviewing is telling the truth or not. It's hard to...
Well, they're under oath.
Yeah, I know, but but if you have any personal prejudices or could you vote... This is one that has been proven wrong a number of times, is... Could you vote for the death penalty?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times that's come up after the person is on the jury and later on they start deliberating whether or not this person is going to receive the death penalty. A lot of times that person, no way he'll vote for the death penalty, or she will vote for the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of been a stickler, but you know.
That's right.
What can you do?
Well, jurors come to their duties from all different walks of life and backgrounds, and there's a play called 12 Angry Men, and if anyone
ever... Henry Fonda was in the movie.
It's terrific. Yeah. It's a terrific play that sort of depicts all of their different personalities that go into this. You know, somebody's just, let's convict them so I can get out of here and get to my business meeting, or others are more... And their roles will sometimes change during that deliberate process. But overall, in my 30 years of dealing with juries across this state, they come with the understanding and the desire to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I have great confidence in the jury system and great confidence in our citizens. Mm-hmm. And that confidence, though, is only undermined by their unwillingness to participate, which is, you know, more and more a problem of people not willing to take the time.
A lot do not want to be on a jury.
No,
especially
no.
A sequestered jury.
I know. And they will do some things to try to not be on a jury, you know. I had the Byron Looper case, which was...
The Cookville case.
Crossville. Which was one of the first televised juries, and I jury trials, and I got the jury out of Sullivan County. Mm-hmm. And a juror in a jury questionnaire, I asked whether or not they'd ever heard of the case, mm-hmm. whether by television, radio, or internet. And this person wrote that they had in all of them. And ultimately, I asked the question, would the fact that you've heard about the case affect your verdict? And the juror wrote, yes, just like a person running against a Democratic senator, they'll either lie or they'll kill you to get the job. Of course, they read enough about it that he was purposefully getting himself in a position where I'd excuse him, you know. So that worked. So if they don't want to serve, they'll figure out a way not to serve.
How could you vote against a man who his middle name was Low Tax?
Well, there you have it. Well, you know, Low Tax Looper had a dog named Low Tax.
You and I talked about this before. And this is strange because I asked you, you know, what type of fella Low Tax was. And you said he was one of the brightest people that you have ever met. And just threw me for a loop.
Yeah, Byron
Looper. You go over the crime that he committed, it didn't seem like it related that way.
Well, Byron Looper was, he had been at the United States Military Academy and, mm-hmm. and had washed out up there after he had been injured. And he was a very bright man. He had read the Tennessee law about how a candidate for an election could not be replaced within 30 days of the election if they became deceased. Mm-hmm. Now, that law has been changed subsequent to this event, but he was a person who had plotted this out very, very carefully, and he had some really unique things that if he had kept his mouth shut, it would have been very difficult to prove.
Did it ever come up in the trial, because I know very little about the trial other than the outcome, but did it ever come up why, you see, did he never did admit the shooting, did he?
No.
And so, therefore, it would never come out why in the world he would take the measures that he did to eliminate his opponent.
But he had talked with others about how this worked, mm-hmm. although he never admitted the killing. He had talked to others about if these factual situations come to pass, there's a contested election. Within 30 days of the election, one of the candidates dies. The other candidate would be able to win by default because you couldn't replace the name.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So it had been well conceived.
That would have been one case I would not want to have been a judge on. It would have been... It would almost be too entertaining to...
Well, there's enough twists and turns in this one case to do another show for you sometime.
We may do that. But later on, you were appointed senior judge.
That's true.
And that is a great compliment. I was complimenting Don Ash the other day for receiving that appointment. You have to be of the highest quality to be named a senior judge, and a lot of people don't realize what the title means, but I mean, you're at the very pinnacle of judgeships in the state of Tennessee.
I think that's a true statement, because you've been sort of blessed with the perception of the Supreme Court that you should be capable of serving on any level of court, and I earlier this month I sat with the Supreme Court in Knoxville on some workers' comp cases, and you'll be sitting in the appellate courts on the criminal or civil side, or the trial courts or the general sessions courts across the state. And it's fascinating to travel the state and see how much different the people are and the problems are that the state has. Really unique.
Do you have to adapt to each region that you go to, or do you remain pretty much stoic in the way you deal with it?
Well, you have to always, it's the same measure of justice
right.
that's being presented, but right. You have to adapt to their customs. Some start at 9, some at 8:30. You know, varying degrees of jurisdiction that judges have in different parts of the state. It's just pretty unique about the delivery system.
and they're not always as formal as they are here.
No, huh? That's true.
Which I find quite interesting, especially some of the smaller districts I've been over, and it's almost like you could have a cup of coffee and tea while you're sitting there and watching
that's true.
It or whatever.
Really unique.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Circuit Judge, Senior Judge Steve Daniels.
Thank you.
One of the most unique restaurants in America has made its way to the borough, the Egg and I Restaurant on Medical Center Parkway. They're in the old Otter's location at the corner of Medical Center Parkway and Thompson Lane. The Egg and I will be open Monday through Friday from 6 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon and from 7 a.m. till 3 on Saturday and Sunday. Grand opening November 26. They also have free meeting rooms for your business luncheon and breakfast. The Egg and I are excited to be interviewing smiling new faces for their lunch staff and breakfast staff. For an interview, call 867-2525.
We're here with Dr. Rishi Saxena, this area's only physician certified in heart CT.
We were one of the earliest to start, and we started doing it before most of the hospital in Nashville.
And while others have acquired it, only Dr. Saxena knows how to use the information.
They don't have people to read it, or they have no experience in dealing with it.
Call 896-4800 to also schedule a test with Dr. Saxena to detect calcium deposits in arteries. It's only $60. No insurance claims will be filed.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. And our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the Doubletree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you driving around in a state of doubt, wondering how your car insurance will really take care of you? I'm State Farm Agent Monty King. Let me get you to a better state, a state of confidence that the coverage you're driving around with is actually driven by your wants and your needs. That's why 97% of the people who've had claims with State Farm would recommend us, without a doubt. Give me a call at 220-2210. You'll see how easy and affordable it can be.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Monty King in Smyrna. Give me a call at 220-2210.
Let Jeff Sowell's Family Restaurant prepare your deep-fried or smoked turkey for Christmas. 867-2164. Complete meals are prepared and ready for pickup when you need it. 867-2164.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Judge Steve Daniels. We want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's onto Ridgely Road. And one of the things that I didn't realize it until you and I were talking a little bit off the air just a second or two ago, that you were also charged with making sure that the judges across the state were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And, you know, I've always heard that there was kind of a trail that would lead back to the judges if something was not done right or the errors were so strong. But I never knew exactly how those were handled. But I have heard of cases like that.
Yeah, I was disciplinary counsel for 3 years, which is charged with judicial ethics violations. Now, the decisions the judge make, that's the review for the appellate court system. Mm-hmm. But as far as ethical considerations, that was my bailiwick in dealing with judges. And that was everything from the Supreme Court down to municipal judges. So there's only about, if you looked at the total numbers in the judiciary, I'm talking about the Supreme Court, the appellate courts, the trial courts, the General Sessions courts, the municipal courts, there's only about 700-800 people that we're talking about.
Wow,
that deliver those services, the judicial services to the state of Tennessee. And, you know, they're people, and they make mistakes, and they have errors of judgment, and they're dealt with, and the punishment range could be everything from recommendation of removal to all the way down to private sanctions of trying to get them to educate or to admit they're doing something wrong and correct. Most of these people are highly motivated to do the right thing, and when it's brought to their attention, they correct whatever they're doing almost immediately. And one of the areas they venture off and violate the ethical rules is by ex parte communications, and by that means one-sided communication. Somebody calls them up and says, "Judge, my son's coming up for probation tomorrow. Would you help me out?" Blah blah blah, and they shouldn't be involved in that, because they're to be an independent arbiter to make a decision and listen to both sides at one time and give the opportunity of the opposing side to rebut whatever is being told. So those are some of the things that we'd deal with.
That's hard for a judge. Say if you've got a good friend in college and. Maybe they've got a son that you like, pretty neat, but they've been involved in something. It's hard. I guess probably the first thing you need to do, I guess, is recuse yourself from it, isn't it? If it gets to that point.
Yeah, if you're that close to it, probably so. But people are going to be sometimes people are actually – they're trying to influence you. They're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
Other times they're innocent. They don't know any different. They're just simply thinking that this is something you need to know to make the decision. But – the judge has to make the decision in the courtroom based on what's presented there, not what is presented by one party or the other in private. So you just feel the citizens themselves would feel that they had not been treated fairly, and they'd have a good reason to think if you make a decision based on information you got outside the courtroom.
Has a judge in the state of Tennessee ever been removed from the bench?
By this process?
Yes.
Yes, they have been. Uh-huh. A General Sessions judge down in more than one have actually been removed over the years. Now, in recent years, most of the time, in my experience, once we had those serious charges, in my experience, they would resign before we actually had to bring the charges. And that happened on more than one occasion.
So basically, a judge is set up in a position of responsibilities, and you're looked at. You're living in a fishbowl. Everything that you do
Absolutely.
Is looked at, and you're second guessed at it, no matter what it is.
You certainly live in a fishbowl. Certainly live in a fishbowl.
We have a caller on the line, Judge, so we got to put our ears on.
Okay.
Caller, welcome aboard with Judge Steve Daniels.
Judge Daniel?
Yes, sir.
Judge Daniel?
Yes, sir.
This is your old soul. I want to tell you, we thank you for your service to the county and enjoying your program, and I never heard anybody say you treat them unfairly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Good luck, Judge.
Thank you.
Judge, you're with us, Mr. Jones.
Thank you.
He was one of our good customers.
Yes. Oh, he was?
Yes, sir.
His hair always looks good.
Yes, sir.
I hadn't got much to cut.
Well, that was all profit, Judge. Enjoyed your program, Mr. Daniel.
All right, thank you again.
All right.
Thank you. Well, we've run out of time, Judge. Is there anything you want to say hi or to anybody out there listening?
Well, I just want to say hello to all of the people who are listening. I can remember when I was very first elected, I came up here and had an interview by the late Neil Lancaster, great man, and all of the people who are in this community. I enjoyed working for you, and I hope I made a honorable servant for you.
You most certainly did, without question, and a good friend also. We'll let everybody know that we have Mr. Jack Jolly on tomorrow,
Wow.
a legend that continues on. So
That's
we'll
true.
See you in the morning at 9.
He'll be a good one. Baseball, for sure.
Yes, sir.